can play podcast hosts for a day, use his opposable thumbs to put on his headphones, and run another episode of Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up, man?
Not much. It's a beautiful day, and I'm drinking a beer, and I'm feeling good.
Wow. Wow. Way to give away what time of day or day of week we're recording on.
I don't think that gives away any of that.
Yeah. I believe there was a beer cracked on a 10:30 a.m. recording on a Saturday once of this podcast. So I think we're...
That sounds right.
You're all right. You're all right. How you doing, man? Other than the... What kind of beer are you drinking? Not to give away free sponsorship, but...
I am currently drinking an Inner Eye from Blood Brothers Brewing. The favorite of mine because I feel like it.
Yeah. Also, the symbol on the can looks a lot like Chris Jericho's logo in AEW for his group, The Inner Circle.
I'm going to take your word for that. I love the can. I did not know there was a Chris Jericho link, but thank you for finding one anyway, because that's fun.
I don't know if it actually is or it's just a coincidence, but yeah, shout out to the demo god. All right, Jake, we got a fun one today.
Yeah.
I'm fired up. It's been a good week over here, actually. I think I'd mentioned on the pod, maybe it was a bonus episode or whatever, but I had the foster Russ and we took him back. Well, he got to spend another week with us. Unfortunately, he had like an infection in his foot, so he couldn't go up for adoption, but it meant we got another week with him. On top of that, I was quite sick, but my COVID results came back negative. So that's a thumbs up. And I paid off the last of my student debt.
Wow. Oh, shit. Yeah. That's amazing. Like, not that I was giving lip service, but the other stuff was like, that's cool. That's like, that's amazing. That's a huge accomplishment.
Yes. I've embezzled all the Columbia House Party Patreon money. if you'd like to refill that before our overlords notice, patreon.com/Columbia House Party.
So that's where that's going. Okay. Yeah.
Failing that, please rate, subscribe, all that good stuff. Today, we're taking a look at what could be described as an early 2000s indie rock supergroup of sorts, one that completely outpaced its peers, in my opinion, with their third album and their third in a short span, no less, boasting incredible vocals, radical perspective shifts, and a spooky origin story. Today, we're talking about the 2004 album from Rilo Kiley, More Adventurous. Is that ever a good introduction to Jenny Lewis? So, as I said, we are going to be joined by a guest today. Our guest knows the indie scene well and balancing multiple projects well. He's been a member of the Arrogant Sons of Bitches, Bond the Music Industry, Pegasus's XL, Antarctico Vespucci, the Bruce Lee Band, and more. He's helped produce for Dan Andriano, Laura Stevenson, and more. He's founded the free and donation-based label Quote Unquote Records, and he has some pretty killer albums of his own, including Worry and Post, which were both on our Columbia House Party favorite albums of the decade, and No Dream, which came out in May and also rules. Anyone who listens to this podcast surely knows. Jeff Rosenstock, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Hi, congratulations on your student loan debt being paid off.
Thanks, man. Long time coming. Don't Don't go to school and then completely change careers and have to go back to school to join a low-paying industry.
Well, but it seems like it turned out fine for you, though.
Yeah, I'm doing well now. It's this is a little later on than I probably should have had student debt, but we all make choices.
How many years did that take?
12 technically, but there's like a reset in there where I went back to do a master's.
Right.
And then was like, oh, I can live off of like 35 grand for a couple years.
Hell yeah, man. That's what we do for a couple years, he says.
Yeah, for a couple years. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Blake and Jake. Jake, congratulations on your beer.
Thank you. It's not quite the same accomplishment, but I feel really good about it.
Good.
Jeff, no noontime beers for you in LA right now?
No, I just made a smoothie for the first time in my life.
Really embracing cool. LA.
Yeah, I'm really embracing LA. I'm at the making a smoothie part of in LA.
How did it turn out?
It was kind of brown, but it tasted good.
Yeah. Mine, I'm like a daily smoothie guy because I don't like a lot of fruits and vegetables. So I just kind of throw everything in a blender first thing in the morning. And it always comes out like this purpley concrete color, but it's really good. And it gets me like 6 or 7 servings. So
that's exactly what I just had. I feel like I'm like a child and I only eat cereal in the morning. So it's good that now I have a way to eat something else in the morning. And that's my breakfast routine.
There you go. It's a new day.
Cass and I tried to do the smoothie thing a few months ago, and we lasted like 2 days. And then we're like, okay, I guess we're not making smoothies anymore.
They're not bad. There's nothing against them. Materials, you can still make it, though.
Yes, that's true. We were just like, to give up. We bailed hard.
Threw the blender out.
Yeah, in the trash.
Thankful for my roommate, Paul. We split it up like every second day. Just whoever's going to eat first just makes the smoothie. It's a nice little routine.
To do that with your roommate, that's what you want. That's great. What a good roommate situation.
You missed out, Jeff. The one time you and I could have been roommates, it turned out you were a subletter instead.
It was great because I just slept in your bed.
Yeah. I wasn't using it. May as well.
I appreciate that. Thank you, by the way. I don't know. I have not thanked you in a voice person. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a very nice note on my whiteboard, though, from you and Christine.
Yeah, we're big whiteboard note people. I don't know.
there's a giant whiteboard in my room. You may as well.
I did not know you guys had a whiteboard at all.
Yeah, it's just in my bedroom.
Oh, okay. That explains it.
Yeah, you haven't made it past that part of the house, Jake.
No, I never get the Blake bedroom invite. I'm jealous.
No, and I don't tell most people that we have a second bathroom attached to my bedroom. We'll just let everyone think there's only the one in the back. All right, we got to talk about Rilo Kiley's more adventurous. Jeff, you had, when I reached out to you to do this podcast, you'd sent me 5 different albums. And initially we were going to do The Clash, but we decided it's never a bad time for some Jenny Lewis, and you told me, and quote, "I love that friggin' record." Jeff, before we dive in more detail, why did you want to do More Adventurous with us?
I don't know. I looked back at that list, and I think the other ones are like, the other things that I said are pretty standard, agreed upon classics, I feel like. And I don't know why this record popped into my head, but I mean, this record's a classic to me, and I when I first heard it, I really had no context for Rilo Kiley other than Jenny Lewis having been in The Wizard and the guitar player being from Salute Your Shorts. And I was like, oh, that's funny. They have a band. That was whenever this came out. Like, I got it. This is embarrassing. I got it to review for like a local paper that I was writing for. And I can guarantee you that my review just mentioned that Jenny Lewis was in The Wizard and that Blake was Salute Your Shorts. And I was like, and they got a band. That's cool, huh? It's not like grindcore or power violence. So it's fine, I guess. And I continued to love this record, and it kind of, I don't know, it's just like, duh, this record's amazing. Everything, like the song, it's, you know, the songs are really good. It's paced really good. The guitar playing is out of control. Blake's song on it is really sweet. Jenny Lewis is the greatest of all time. You know, just all that stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the bands that both Jenny and Blake were in prior. And if you go through all of the members of this band, it's some bands.
Those aren't bands that I'm talking about. The Wizard is a movie about Nintendo.
The Power Glove, baby.
Yeah,
right.
And Salute Your Shorts was a children's television show.
Yes, I actually knew. I should have caught that because I didn't realize that Blake Sennett was also one of the bullies on Boy Meets World.
Yes, yeah,
Joey the Rat Epstein.
Joey the Rat. Yeah,
I don't think I knew that.
Him and Ethan Suplee.
Yeah, he went by a different name at that point. Blake Soper was what he was billed as.
He was the non-Ethan Suplee bully.
Yup.
Yeah, he was Joey the Rat Epstein,
and he was
Wow.
Also, Alex fucking Hefcat is on Boy Meets World. He's the other teacher, not the motorcycle driver teacher. Wow. Yeah.
Jeez. Boy Meets World. Wow.
And
that's
Sean Hunter for Boy Meets World reads Anthony Kiedis's audiobook autobiography, Scar Tissue, which I highly highly recommend if you've got multiple hours of to kill.
What's his name?
Ryder Strong.
He has a weird name. Ryder Strong.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Shout out to Cabin Fever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Boy Meets World. Cabin Fever. Oh, Scar Tissue audiobook. Yeah. Mic drop. That's it.
Wow, this episode just filled with child actors. Jake, you're like the third most notable child actor we're talking about on this podcast.
I'm always the third most notable child actor we're talking about on the podcast.
Jake, before we get into the album, what about you? I know this was one that we had on our brainstorm sheet really early on, and once I sent you Jeff's list, you were all over it, wanting to do more adventurous.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of came to them really late comparatively. Like, I was not super into them when they were around, which is weird because, like, the whole Saddle Creek Barsook world was very much my thing. But I don't know why I never listened to them. And then I got into them in university because I think friends were talking about them randomly one day. And I was like, I know that name. I'll listen to it. And then I was like, oh, yes, this is excellent. And has just been a band that's always kind of stuck in my brain. Like, they're one of those bands for me that I don't always listen to, but every now and then I'll be like, you know what? I feel like listening to Rilo Kiley for like 4 days, which I know I've said a lot on this show, and we've had a few of those. But
hey, it's a good way to consume.
Yeah, and then when we were brainstorming ideas for albums, whenever that was, a few weeks ago, I happened to have gotten drunk with Cassie and watched the music video for Portions for Foxes, and I was like, we should do a Rilo Kiley episode, because that's how I make all my decisions now.
All right, guys, we're going to dive into More Adventurous after this. All right, so for a little background, sure, a lot of you guys are familiar anyway, but just in case, Jenny Lewis, you may know from her solo work as well as with the Postal Service or as a child actress. Blake Sennett was in The Elected and Night Terrors of 1927 and Boy Meets World, of course. The band is also comprised of Pierre DeReeder and Dave Rock, who joined the band in 1998, and then Jason Bozell as a second percussionist and Mike Bloom on pedal steel and guitar were added later on. As Sennett told Loveline in 2005, this is where the spookiness comes in. Yeah, Loveline. The name, so this is what he said in 2005, because the story's going to change here. The name Rilo Kiley was from a dream where Blake was being chased by a sports almanac, and Rilo Kiley was a 19th century Aussie Rules football player who doesn't actually exist, but he found in the almanac. Then the story has changed over time, and in 2007, he told Q that he'd met a character in a dream named Rilo Kiley that predicted the date of Jenny Lewis's death. Much more morbid, certainly less cartoony than being chased by a sports almanac, but
I gotta say, like, even though it's a dream, Aussie Rules, like, Rilo Kiley, such a good name for a made-up Aussie Rules football player.
100%, yeah. That's a creative genius there. In his dreams.
That's how you know.
I couldn't figure why the story changed, but...
Well, is that when Under the Black Light came out? Because that was kind of a more dark and brooding record. Maybe the origin story changes to match the tone of the record every time.
That was the press cycle.
Yeah, it did come out. It did come out in 2007. So you're probably right.
Oh, and shit! I wonder, and I was when they were breaking up. So maybe he was just being a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Jenny Lewis, I know when you're going to die. And
yeah, I told you it was about football. I was sparing your feelings.
Oh, boy. What I'm most curious about now is, like, did he intentionally change it? Or was this, like, did he Mandela effect himself into thinking that's what the dream was actually about? Just tell yourself it's true enough times and then...
Honestly, if I came up with that story and I was in a band called Rilo Kiley, I would never back away from that story. Yeah. Like, regardless of where it came from, that would be it.
I feel like there was an era of music journalism that I really liked as a fan of music, where bands that would do interviews just would not give a fucking shit about answering accurately and would just try and say the most funny and absurd thing possible. And I wonder if all of these answers are that. I wonder if every interview you read with Blake Sennett, he's got a different reason why Rilo Kiley was in his dream.
I hope so. I kind of wanted Pup to do that when they get asked all the time what Pup means. Like, well, you should have just said something different every single time.
Yeah. And now they blew it.
Missed opportunity. Yeah, yeah. They blew it now. Now everyone
knows. Classic Pup.
Classic Pup.
So once they settled on Rilo Kiley, they released a self-titled independently in 1999. It was then repressed as the Initial Friend EP in 2000 and 2001. Those are very rare and expensive pressings, by the way. So if you find one, hop on it and fire it up on Discogs. They subsequently signed with Barsook Records to release their first official full lengths, which was Takeoffs and Landings in 2001, at which point they jumped to Saddle Creek because Saddle Creek's early 2000s roster needed reinforcements, apparently. Desparacitos, Bright Eyes, Cursive, Spoon, even Tokyo Police Club by the end. Apparently that wasn't enough. They also needed Rilo Kiley. So pretty good run there for early 2000s Saddle Creek. They released via that label in 2002, The Execution of All Things, which includes this, one of my favorite Rilo Kiley songs, Spectacular Views. It builds to such a nice, like, intense emotional high point. It's a very good Jenny Lewis song.
The guitar solo in that song is fun.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
From there, that album was fairly well received. They then created their own imprint, Brute Butte Records, under Warner Bros. And they started to get a little more attention because of The Elected and because of the Postal Service. And then in 2004, they come out with More Adventurous. So that's what we're going to dive into now. Jeff, the first question I want to ask you about this album specifically, and I think I know the answer, but I don't, you know, I'm not a deep guitar knowledge person. I did a Twitter search
for my deep
for like, yeah, I did a Twitter search for like people that I know who had mentioned Rilo. Actually, specifically for you, like if you had tweeted anything about Rilo Kiley in the past or whatever, and you referred to their Mega Man guitars.
Yeah.
And I am curious as to what that means and if I understood that correctly.
I mean, in portions for foxes, for example, like the quiet verse, like after the bridge, there's a pretty young thing standing next to you. That verse, when the guitars come in, it's like Thin Lizzy harmonies, kind of, where they're always just kind of playing thirds with each other. But it just, I feel like just the melodic sensibility is just very chiptune to me. It's very, and like Mega Man to me is like just the rock and roll, like chiptune soundtrack, you know? and the guitar is like a like that could be a Mega Man thing, or like the solo at the end of I Never, like, but with all the harmonies and stuff on top of it. And I just think I think it rocks. I also think it's funny, but not in like a haha. That's like, it's like, it makes you smile. And I think in indie rock, there's a lot of pretentiousness. And I thought that something that like, cause I don't know, man, I feel like when I first heard Rilo Kiley or heard of Rilo Kiley, I was a punk and I am like, I don't want to listen to anything that's not punk and like any like hipster shit, get the fuck out of here, that kind of stuff. But then there's stuff like that that makes you go like, oh, they have a little bit of a, not even a sense of humor, just like they're not afraid to do sick shit, even if it's not like the most serious or like auteur kind of thing to do, you know?
Yeah, that's great. It's funny. I was watching this Face Culture interview with Jenny and Blake, and they kind of asked, like, what's the difference between doing your solo work and doing the band together? And Jenny said, Blake has a tendency to rock out a little more. He gets involved with the guitar harmonies, where I'm a truly shitty guitar player, just the worst,
which I don't agree with. Relatable content.
Yeah, I don't agree with, but I appreciate the self-deprecation and imposter syndrome when you're Jenny fucking Lewis and you really, you don't need to worry about that stuff. But
I don't think there's any musicians. We all feel like fucking hacks.
Hey, I'm a writer and Jake's an actor. So I think we're all in the same boat of, you know, your actual quality is probably inversely proportional to how you feel about your work. So
if there's one thing that actors are, it's fucking hacks. So, and I say that as one.
It's you can't spell actor without some hack, kind of. Yeah.
Jake, actually, I'm going to bring this up now because speaking of you as an actor, didn't you have some really dumb joke when you were doing Bad Jews about how like you could sing it in the tone of Portions for Foxes?
Yeah, because it was called Bad Jews. So I would just bother everybody at rehearsal by singing the title of the play, but to the chorus of Portions for Foxes. And people didn't find that as funny as
I did.
Are
they just like, what is this song?
They're like, why are you singing the title of the play in this tune? And I was like, oh, I guess that's a fair question.
Did you write that? Can we use that?
Can we make that the theme song, please? I'm glad you explained that, though, because I did see that in your notes that you sent, and I had no idea what you were talking about.
I'm glad I remember your shitty tweets more than you do.
Yeah, someone should.
That song, by the way, NPR ranked it the number 148th song of the 21st century by a female or non-binary artist.
What? Can you tell me what's better?
Also, what is that list?
Yeah, I'm not going to read out the 147 ahead of it, but I can probably find the list here.
Yeah, dig up some choice cuts. I want to know a shitty ass song is better than Portions for Foxes.
At least they made the divide. I'm glad they divided that list up for no fucking reason.
Yeah. And then there's the man list. Like, all right, that's the one that comes out of the Friday. Like, all right, we got it. The one you've been waiting for. Right,
are you guys ready
for what number one is?
Can we guess?
Sure. If you want to guess every song of the last 2000 to 2018 by a female or non-binary artist,
Jake. I'm going to say all the single ladies.
Ooh, I was going to say like Poker Face or Shallow.
Okay.
Was it Shallow? I bet it was Shallow.
What's Shallow? No.
The Star is Born song.
The top of...
That was everywhere for a minute.
So Single Ladies is number three.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a pretty good guess.
Okay.
Pretty good. Not good enough.
Number two is Maps by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Okay.
All right.
And number one is Paper Planes by MIA.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll take all
that's
those.
That's fair. I still think Portions of Foxes is
better. What's number 100? What's like number 135?
Okay, give me one sec.
Sorry, you have to click page 9, page 10.
Yeah, that's what I got to do, yeah. But it's okay.
I just want to know, like, because it seems like the bottom parts of these countdowns are kind of arbitrary. They're just like,
well, 135 is Mary by Big Thief.
That's not better than Porsches for Foxes.
No, like some of the other ones in this range are like that's Goodies by Ciara.
That's 135. That should be higher too. Yeah.
The thing, so no, but like, yeah, when you're doing like, this,
Tibetan Pop Stars is 128.
When you're doing this many songs, okay, like when you're doing 200 songs on a list, the back like 75 is just like, we have to put this in or else people are going to get mad. Like there's no ranking of like 147 to 135. Like that's not.
We got to spend this week at the office on 150 yeah, to 160 and make sure to really get it right. I'm surprised that I've liked every song that you've mentioned so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, me too, actually.
List. I think I was talking shit about this list. I was like, okay. Even that Big
well,
Thief
I'm only,
song.
I'm only reading out the good ones.
Give me, what's the shit one? What's one that's like, come on.
Well, there's one that I haven't heard of. 121 is Gloss by Gloss.
I don't know. I've never heard that in my life.
Oh, Gloss are a hardcore band.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
They're cool.
Anyway, I don't like saying the bad songs on here. So.
Oh,
I
don't. Yeah.
Coward.
But
I'm looking up this list.
Wait. Jeff will say the bad ones.
And I just typed into Google 200 best songs by a female or non-binary yeah, artist because.
Yeah, and it's NPR, so you'll be able to get there.
Okay.
Jake, I don't want to make this about wrestling again, but this reminds me, Zoobs and I always used to like, so there's like a list of the top 500 wrestlers that gets released
every
year.
Too many for a list.
And
it's too many.
Too many. And then there are also like a pair of twins who never wrestle solo. They just wrestle as a tag team. And they're always like every year, like 10 or 12 spots apart. And then some years they flip order. And like, who is in there like debating which one of those guys is higher and then like deciding that the two guys who look the exact same and only wrestle together are like 10, 12 spots apart. Like how do you thread the needle of being between these two guys? Anyway, that's what the back half of lists remind me of.
Here's the thing about lists about like music and like, I guess any art, but mostly music. And I say this fully aware that I'm a hypocrite who makes a ranked list every year, but like lists should just be just make them alphabetical. Just like don't rank them because it's arbitrary and dumb.
Yeah, or you're not going to get those clicks, baby.
That's yeah, true.
And Jake, you're also like, you're being a little bit hypocritical.
I'm absolutely
because
being
there's
hypocritical.
No one that I know that likes to complain about lists more
that's
than you.
That's not true.
It's not all the way true, but you do like to debate the
because
rankings.
I just like. I don't know. I don't mind like small lists, but I like the 200 stuff. It's too much. You know, it's not.
Check it out. Number 81 in this list.
Jeff's cutting you off, man.
Is Jenny Lewis just one of the guys? Swap those two out.
Okay.
Just swap them out.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I back
sorry,
that.
I don't know.
Again, because they forgot Rilo Kiley, and they're like, just toss it.
Yeah,
in.
They're like, this song came out 4 years ago. Look. NPR, we love you. I'm sorry.
All right, I'm going to get us back somewhere close to the rails
fine
here. Jake,
I guess.
Jake, I know one of your opinions of this album is that it was a pretty good indication of where Jenny Lewis was going to be able to go as a solo artist. Do you feel like Portions for Foxes is kind of like the track that exemplifies that best?
No, I think it's more the... And this is going to sound very reductive to Jenny Lewis's solo career, and I truly do not mean it that way because I love Jenny Lewis's solo career. But like, I think a lot of the tracks on this record, especially when you compare it to sort of Execution of All Things previous, I think have a much more Jenny Lewis solo sound. Obviously, she leans a lot more into sort of a bit more of a country sound now, especially like her work with the Watson Twins. But I feel like the songs on this record, like I Never and Does He Love You, like those are songs that I feel like you could put on her record that came out last year and it wouldn't really be that out of place. Like, this is the wrong way to say this and I'm going to be mad at myself for saying it. I can already tell. But like, the Execution of All Things to me is like very much mid-2000s indie rock, indie pop. And I love it. Like, it's great. Whereas this sounds more like, this sounds kind of like a Jenny Lewis solo record to me. even though it's...
Yeah, it's a little more power pop.
Yeah, and like a little more singer-songwriter-y. And I just think that you can hear the beginnings of where she's gone and where she's going more so in this than I think you can in any of the records that came before it.
Well, Jake, I'm glad you mentioned Does He Love You and I Never. Before we get to those two, so the stated goal on this, and this plays into the Mega Man guitars and all that, was, as the album title suggests, and is more than just about... how you should, you know, respond to heartbreak and stuff like that. They also wanted to be more adventurous, and you hear that in a lot of these songs and a lot of what you just said there, Jake. The album starts on It's a Hit, which was the first single off the album as well, which is like kind of a curious way to come out with this George W. Bush.
That's funny.
Yeah, this like George W. Bush.
No chorus. Like,
yeah. also like the single art of the sad monkey in the crown in the suit of armor that is also wearing a crown in that really weird music video. Just a weird first foot forward off this album. And then Portions for Foxes was the second single. And then I Never was also released as a single, which, Jeff, I believe you have a bit of a personal connection to.
Yeah, that was me and Christine's wedding song. That was her first dance at her wedding.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's very nice.
What a great choice.
Thanks. We our friend our friend Laura Stevenson and her band and some friends played it, and they played it beautifully, and it was really nice.
That's great. Laura rocks.
That's
her,
very cool.
Her last album is so good. Yeah. For anyone unfamiliar, this is the song I Never.
I'm only a woman, of flesh and bone, and I wept much, we all do, I thought I might die alone. But I had never, 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 never met you. So baby, be good to me. I got nothing to give you, you see, except everything.
What a great way to start that song off, like for a first dance. That's perfect.
Yeah, I got to ask, did you go through, like, did you have a list of first dance songs? You had to like pick it out. I only ask because like we've had like our discussions too. So I'm curious as to like, is this a normal thing of people to like figure it out?
For a while, like for a really long time, we were talking about the song Try a Little Tenderness by Otis Redding. But that song is like long and not that much happens for a while in it. Like there's no like it's just like organ and singing for a while. And that seemed like it could be weird. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we were talking about the song Airplane Over the Sea, just because I don't know, just because of the feelings it evokes, I guess. But then also that record is like a parable for the Holocaust and the Diary of Anne Frank. So we're like, okay, that's probably just okay, a bad omen to do that. It seemed bad, you know, obviously. And then we just we're like, what about this? What about I Never? We're like, yeah, we both really like that song. That'd be a great first dance song. That was it. It wasn't really like anything too far beyond that. Oh, and I saw Jenny Lewis with Christine, my wife, right at the end of October on her birthday, like a month or so before we moved out of New York, and she played I Never, which we did not expect
at all. Oh, cool.
Because awesome. I didn't know that was a single. I haven't heard of her doing it. She was just like, I'm going to play a Milo Kiley song. And we were like, oh, cool. This is going to be awesome. And she played I Never. We were like, what the fuck? You tore the seats out of... Burned the building down. Tweeted all of it.
I went through her Setlist FM, and it looked like Silver Lining and With Arms Outstretched were the two Rilo Kiley songs that she did the most. So I'm glad you guys got that. That's awesome.
Oh, I'm glad we got that too. Fuck, it's like she knew.
Yeah,
maybe she did.
That's cool. Jake, have you guys figured yours out yet, or still kind of kicking things around?
Yeah, no, we have. We switched it up. I forget what we were originally going to do, but we ended up settling on No Children by the Mountain Goats.
Because that's a great song. An angry first.
Yeah. It's basically just telling all our in-laws that, like, we're not having kids.
That's good. Yeah. A functional first dance.
Yeah. We want to be efficient. Just, like, stop asking. Here's why.
All right, Jake, you also mentioned Does He Love You, which is a really good song. It's one of my favorites on the album. And then
Does He Love You's crazy. That song's crazy. The lyrics in Does He Love You are like, I don't know. Yeah. I can't think of too many other songs in recent memory, and especially of that era, where it's just like a compelling narrative, where if you just read this as a story with no music and nobody singing it to you, you'd be like, oh shit, you know?
Yeah, it's incredible. This, like, the California weather as a stand-in for, like, well, seasons don't change, so I don't really have the same gauge of time. And, like, that being kind of a metaphor for, like, oh, like, watching your friends or people in your life or whatever kind of speed by you in terms of some real life stuff, which is a topic that's come up on this podcast a couple times. It's so well done. And like the heartbreak in that final, the final verse into the final chorus there is just so good.
That's one of those songs, like, this sounds stupid and I don't know if it's the right way to phrase it, but it feels like a song that's just, like, ubiquitous in my mind. Like, going back to listen to this album, like, I forgot that song was on this album, but it's also a song that I don't know super well, but also feel like I've known for a really long time, which, like, I guess is true, and I'm not explaining this well, but it's like, it's just,
well, yeah, what you were saying before and just kind of how I feel about this is that I feel like on this record and on the new one, most specifically, but this record, like, Jenny Lewis is writing, like, fucking classic songs after song. And Does He Love You especially is like, this could have been a song in the 60s. This could have been sung anytime and it would be exactly as potent and exactly as relevant, which is why, like, I think this album has such staying power, is that these songs are like, they're fucking, like, it's like you already know them because they're that strong and they're that, like, emotionally resonant.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining that way better than I did. Yeah.
You talk about, like, the cohesive story in Does He Love You, and then, like, you know, you get close to the back of the album, and then there's A Man, Me, Then Jim, which is this really cool layered three-perspective story. Like, you could almost picture one of those movies that goes through the same set of events through three different lenses, and then they all meet up at the end, and that's that song with the, including these, you know, these little changes to the chorus, even though it's a chorus, the perspective changes slightly in the chorus for those as well. This is A Man, Me, Then Jim.
Instead of living is the problem, well, that's just baffling. And at the wake I waited around to see my ex-first love. And I barely recognized her, but I knew exactly what she was thinking of. We sat quietly in the corner, whispering close about loss.
And I remembered why I loved her, and I asked her why I drove her off. She said, you can sleep upon my doorstep, you can promise me indifference, Jim. But my mind is made up, and I'll never let you in again. For the slow fade of love, it might hit you from below. It's your gradual ascent into life you never met. It's the slow fade of love. It's the slow fade of love. It's the slow.
I know, like, this might be semi unfair because I wasn't super paying attention to them when this album came out, but like the songwriting level on this album is so high. And I feel like compared to a lot of her, you know, like Saddle Creek contemporaries.
Yeah.
She gets the love now. She gets love now. But like back then, like Conor Oberst was on the cover of Rolling Stone being hailed as the next Dylan, and like nothing against Conor Oberst, like this is just as good.
Yes, I'd say this is better. I think this is the best. And these, like, I don't know. There was so much love. I don't know. You have to wonder, is that just like sexism in the music industry? You know, is that
right?
Like, why was the love there for like being like, this is the next Bob Dylan, but the love is not there for Jenny Lewis, who is like outpacing everybody. You know, I feel like the love that she got was for a postal service. And then it's like, is that just because it was behind Ben Gibbard? And that was like, you know, it's a shame. I feel like Rilo Kiley should have been like the Foo Fighters after this record came out. That everyone should have been like, well, every one of these songs is incredible. And that's that. All right, let's go. You know, I said stupid 22-year-old me was writing reviews in local papers like she was in The Wizard. So, you know, it is literally my fault.
So just to round out the album here, just because we gotta keep it moving a little bit. They do try some different stuff on here. You have Jimmy Tamborello on Accidental Death, Jimmy Tamborello from the Postal Service. You have the title track, which has this nice nod to Frank O'Hara poem. And then the album closes with It Just Is, which was written following the death of Elliott Smith, who was a friend of the band and who they had opened for a couple times. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Fuck. That's like...
Yeah.
I gotta go.
I also had no idea that there was a connection there at all.
Yeah, so they opened for him a couple times. Ripcord, which Blake Sennett wrote, was written in kind of the same time frame. And then It Just Is, which is written by Jenny Lewis, was written in the same time frame as well. There's also Conor Oberst has said in interviews in recent years that him and Jenny Lewis collaborated on a couple songs following Smith's death. But and there's like a project out there called Blood on the Four Tracks, and it's just like never been released to the extent of my knowledge.
Put that shit out. They gotta do some Neil Young homegrown shit with that.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're gonna talk about the how the album was received and Jenny Lewis's solo career after this. All right, so poor hosting job on my part. We get through the album, and I've left out the best part of not just this album, but any album. Jeff, give it to us, man.
Oh, I do I have to say that again?
our lovely producer, our excellent producer, Dylan Wilson, might be able to just chop it in there.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah. This part of the song is good. I don't know. I've never...
Okay, Dylan said he could piece it together.
Can we keep all this in though?
We should keep all of this.
Can we keep all this? Yeah. This is the good shit. This is why people listen.
This is why people like podcasts. They want to hear their friends be confused about what's going on.
Yeah. All right. So Dylan's going to put that in right here. All right. I'll bring us back here and then... is there any other stuff you guys want to touch on the album before I get into kind of the back part of this podcast?
The part of that song, the title, All Is Fair in Love and War, Love and War, The part where she goes, and the doctors came to identify the body, is the best part of any record ever.
Okay, I'm going to set you up for that. I'm going to set you up for that coming at a break here. All right, wrapping up More Adventurous. The album was modestly received. It has a 75 on Metacritic. Got a 5 out of 5 from The Independent, but only a 6.7 from Pitchfork, shocker, which cited some low lows where the music couldn't keep up to Lewis, in their opinion.
Where?
Rolling Stone.
Giant fart noise.
Would you have it pulled up? I want to know what they said sucked.
Jeff going campaigning against Pitchfork's review from 2004.
No. And it's great that they give me press coverage and I wouldn't say anything. No. I know you're talking about when this record came out, the reviews were, I remember reading reviews and being like, is something wrong with me? I feel like this record's really, 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 really good.
Well, I think it's like different sort of, I don't want to say fads because that's absolutely the wrong word, trends, I guess, in music, I feel don't get the respect in their time. So I know that makes me sound like all art is unappreciated in its own time, but like, that's not what I mean. Like, because this was right, this is like the heyday of that like indie rock, you know, and I feel like it didn't.
It seems like if anything would get that love, it would be this though, because this is like what
was true. Yeah. It's true. I don't know. It's a weird dichotomy.
Yeah, here are the two quotes from the Pitchfork review that stood out to me as just like, what? So it said, their records have never quite lived up to the potential they've hinted at, leaving one to wonder what a stronger focus on better production could do. And then
fuck off. Yeah.
And then
well, the production on this record is pristine. That part yeah. I was talking about. The class.
Yeah. And then at the end, but Jenny Lewis has a voice that deserves to swoon in front of a rock band on one track and a string section on the next. Productions like these tend to underscore the band's weaknesses.
It was produced by Mike Mogus and Jimmy Tamborello. Like, who are you?
I don't,
who are you to criticize? Right?
Yeah.
That's cool. I figured this was like big budget record.
Yeah. Jeff, this is a regular portion of this podcast where it's just like take 2 minutes to groan at the reviews that the album that is now beloved in 2020 got at the time of release.
Well, the thing that frustrates me, and this is just for a personal fan of Rilo Kiley and Jenny Lewis's music. I feel like Under the Blacklight, the record after this, got so much love and so much hype. And I feel like it's a way, I feel like everything's a way less strong record than this record. I feel like this record is like the one, you know?
Jake, how do you feel about that? Normally, that's a kind of our closing is we'll rank the albums or something like that. But it's as good a point as any to. No. That's great because we're going to talk about Jenny in a second solo stuff. So I guess, Jake, yeah, how do you feel More Adventurous versus Under the Blacklight or any of their other albums?
I mean, I was always more of a Execution of All Things fan. Okay. But I think that's also colored by nostalgia. And I think that's it's the kind of record that sounds really good in your 20s. And I'm not saying it's a bad record because I still love it. But like, it's like that, like you just want the faster, like indie rock songs. But now going back to it, especially listening to it this week to sort of prep for today, I was sort of surprised at how much more I like this than Execution of All Things. Like I have Under the Blacklight like third or fourth in their discography personally. Which I don't dislike it. I just think it's sort of, it just seems like a lesser draft of More Adventurous to me, where More Adventurous is like, it's stuff that I didn't notice when I was 20. You know, like the songwriting level and the lyricism and the instrumentation and like the production.
The double octaves and the.
Yeah, and like the Mega Man guitars and the.
I'm going to use that term all the time now.
It's not the only good thing. I don't want
No, no, no.
But you're right. You're right. It's cool. Like it's such a cool idea to do in like your hit
on
single.
To have Mega Man guitars on top of an orchestra, like the fucking rocks.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it's just such a. It's like it was thinking on a different level than a lot of stuff at this time. And since, yeah. And like, I went into this being like, oh, there's no way I'm going to come out of here saying like it's better than Execution of All Things. That album's so good, which it is. But like, this is just, this doesn't get the hype of those mid-2000s indie rock record rankings or whatever. I know I'm getting mad about lists again, but like,
isn't like, it it's interesting so good that like that Execution of All, I feel like Execution of All Things and Under the Blacklight, both like people love those records. They talk about those records a lot. If this one's in the middle of there, it's just like,
yeah,
I don't know, this classic record that everyone was like, eh, maybe next time.
Maybe this is too big a claim, and it might be because I just thought of it, but I do feel like
Jake, don't qualify your own feelings and thoughts. They're valid.
Always.
Just,
I always just have them. To. Qualify I feel them. Like this record, like I think it sounds so much more like 2020 than so many records of this time. Like, I don't know if it's directly influential in a lot of stuff that's of this vein today, but like, it sounds like it is.
Yeah. I think that kind of goes back to that. Just like, it's a classic record. Like, it sounds like it could come from any era. Like, if you're talking about like just good songs, kind of country production with like little flares and stuff like that, like there really isn't much better than this, you know?
I agree. Okay, just to wrap up the album quickly, you know, it got them some popularity. You know, it was in Rock Band. It was in the Wedding Crashers soundtrack.
When you saw the Wedding Crashers and that Weaker Than song played at the credits, were you also like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Wedding Crashers was some sneaky good soundtrack work.
Yeah.
Working Weaker Than's and Rilo Kiley into a movie that is not that sweet and sentimental.
I bet that movie does not hold up well.
No, I can't imagine it does.
You're right, though. The Weaker Than's popping up in that credit sequence was extremely confusing.
I was like, they could do that? They know about the Weaker Than's?
You're Vince, not allowed to do
this
that.
This incredibly
Vince
popular
Vaughn?
Band. Someone else is
Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn loves John K. Samson.
Yeah.
There's also in that movie the breakup with him and Jennifer Aniston, like the band and concert that it circles around is the old 97s, and even that like seems too cool, like cool.
That's
and
right.
Maybe Vince V is like, an alt country guy.
Yeah,
he likes his alt.
I guess so. So following More Adventurous, Lewis actually toured with Postal Service first. Then doubled back with Rilo Kiley, including performances on Conan and Kimmel. They did stints opening for Bright Eyes and Coldplay. And then, as we talked about, released Under the Blacklight in 2007, which is also held in pretty high regard. In 2010, they kind of admitted they were on an unofficial hiatus. And then that got more and more official over time. And then finally, Jenny Lewis in 2014 said that they were officially done. And now all we have is the Rilo Kiley bot on Twitter to occasionally tweet Rilo Kiley lyrics at us. Completely devoid of context. Jenny Lewis then, of course, went on to a solo career. She's also, she's released 4 solo albums, 1 with Nice As Fuck, 1 with Jenny and Johnny, and then her latest solo album, On the Line, from 2019, was really well received. It was one of my favorite albums of the year, including this song, Red Bull and Hennessy.
Forgiven.
terms of the difference between the sounds, in that same Face Culture interview I mentioned earlier, asking what the difference between the solo work and the Rilo Kiley stuff was, Jenny said, I think when you're in a band, it's a democracy in a lot of ways, so you have to make sure that everyone feels comfortable with every aspect of what you're doing. But if you're on your own, you can really humiliate yourself in whatever way you choose.
Jenny Lewis.
Jeff, I'm curious if you relate to that at all, having been in bands and done solo work.
Yeah, I'm lucky that everyone I'm in a band with or have been in a band with in the last, like, I don't know, pretty much my whole life is down to allow me to make an ass of myself as much as I want. And I in turn am happy with them making as much of an ass out of themselves as they'd like.
Well, as your Instagram caption once said, toot, 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 you're a jazz boy.
Yeah,
I can't get in the way of the jazz boy on the sax.
I am a little jazz boy.
Oh man. Okay. Jeff, at this part of the podcast, unless you guys have any other thoughts on that before we get to kind of the closing segment here, Jake and or Jeff.
I think On the Line is so fucking good.
It's that amazing. Record,
it's awesome. Like,
it's so good.
It's kind of the reason why I feel like it's connective to me to More Adventurous is that I think both of these records and why I'm like, how is this not number one on this list? Or like, how are they saying that Jenny Lewis isn't the next Bob Dylan? Is because like she has the capability to write these songs that are devastating, that could just like stop your, just like fuck you up and stop your day, or just like give you like escape from whatever you're thinking and just like enter this world. I feel like On the Line is like so much of that in this record too. Anyway, yeah, On the Line rules. Jenny Lewis rules. She does good press. She did good press on the Line. I feel like every interview I saw her do, I was like, Jenny Lewis is so fucking cool and she does not give a shit. And
she's the best.
It's what you could aspire to be if you continue to follow the murky spiral of music into like adulthood, I guess, you know.
Perfect. All right, Jeff, at this point in the podcast is where we normally pick one song from the album we discuss to go on our mixtape. The mixtape is kind of like a living diary of the show's episodes. When we have a guest, we tend to concede that choice to the guest. You know, I don't know if you want to go with your wedding song, or if you want to go with Portions for Foxes, whichever way you want to go here, Jake and I will support you. The song off of More Adventurous.
As long as it's one of those two ways?
No. Any song off the album, as long as it's from More Adventurous is all. That's the only qualifier there.
Oh, I'm going to go with one we haven't even talked about.
Oh boy.
Which is the title track.
And it's only dogs that we're counting on fingers broken long ago. I read with every broken heart we should become more adventurous. And if you banish me from your prophets, and if I get banished from the kingdom, I'd sacrifice money and heaven all for love. Let me be loved. Let me be loved. And if my brain quits, well, I guess then that's just it. And if my hands stop working, you can call me lazy. And if I get pregnant, I guess I'll just have the baby. Let it be love, let me be loved. I've been trying to nod my head, but it's like I've got a broken end. Wanting to say I will as my last testament. For you to be saved and me to be brave, we don't have to walk down that aisle. Cause if marriage ain't enough, well at least we'll be loved.
It just a, it's beautiful song. I don't know. It's really hard. I'm looking at the track list right now and I'm just like, or actually put the absence of God. This, I don't know. Okay. I can't pick. I don't know. All right. I don't know. You pick. I don't know. It just is. The hits. I don't know. They're all good. Jake, they're all good songs.
Jake, do you have a take on this one?
I don't, but I am enjoying. I agree though. Like this is one of those albums. It's like, oh, there's only 11 to pick from, but I could pick any of the 11.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm going to say, I'm going to say let's go with the gut. And Jeff, you said your first one was more adventurous.
More adventurous.
The
title track. Yeah.
Then let's do that. Yeah. First gut reaction.
Yeah. Never. I mean, I feel like it describes the episode as well, where we just went completely off the rails and got more adventurous, and then no, the album itself. And it's a nod to Frank O'Hara is never going to get an argument from.
Can
me.
You so explain that's this good. To me? I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you? Which part?
Look, go. I'm asking the Frank O'Hara. Okay, first, who's Frank O'Hara?
Oh, he's a poet.
Okay.
Frank O'Hara.
Oh, Francis Russell Frank O'Hara. No, what is this a reference to? What is more adventurous? I don't know this.
So the line, I read with every broken heart, we should become more adventurous, is a reference to a Frank O'Hara poem where he says, each time my heart is broken, it makes me feel more adventurous.
Whoa. Cool. Yeah, that's a very that's a very stunning line. And that's a good stanza, a good verse, a good...
The poem is called Meditations in an Emergency by Frank O'Hara. Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm not a huge poetry guy, but I have like a book, like a collection of works from a bunch of, you know, 40s, 50s kind of thing. And yeah, it's good stuff.
That's cool.
Shout out to our producer, Dylan Wilson. He helps us out on these all the time. And we gave him an especially messy one today. So shout out to Dylan. And thanks for all you do on that front. And thank you to Jeff. Guys, you know Jeff already, I'm sure, if you listen to this podcast. But be sure to check out all of his great music, including No Dream, which is available digitally on Bandcamp or wherever you buy your albums. Please check out his donation-based label, Quote Unquote Records. And, you know, not to speak for Jeff, but where you can, continue to support your Black and LGBTQ initiatives. I know, Jeff, that's something you're passionate about as well, and we try to push on this podcast as much as possible. Jeff, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun.
Yeah, thanks. This was awesome. Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, you're the best, man.
Try the fish.